Guest on InfoTrack is Sarah Clark, co-director of the University of Michigan Health C.S. Mott Children's Hospital National Poll on Children's Health. And we're talking about their recent poll that focused on children's anger and how parents manage it. Sarah, did your survey identify the most common triggers for children's anger?
A lot of things will cause kids to get angry, both at home or at school. So we didn't do too much exploring that, but I do want to point out that it can be either an external force, or sometimes it's just the child isn't feeling well, didn't sleep well, is just kind of in a mood. And as a lot of parents know, on some days, anything can set your kid off.
How do parents typically recognize that their child might be struggling with anger more than other kids their age?
I think a clue in that is parents' answers to our question about how they avoid their kid getting angry or frustrated. What are they doing to prevent it? So the biggest one was making sure the kid gets enough sleep. We all know when kids get overtired, they tend to get cranky. Helping to identify what those triggers are and then avoid them. So parents recognize that that is a big problem. The other things are, maybe some parents aren't thinking about this, helping avoid overscheduling. Sometimes as parents, we want to allow our kids to be involved in lots of different things and having them have a lot of opportunities, but too much isn't good for kids. And those are the types of things that parents are recognizing can cause their kids to have an even quicker trigger where they might get angry.
Did your poll find any differences between boys and girls?
In a couple of ways. Parents of boys were more likely to say that their child had had negative consequences from their anger. And we also found a little bit of difference in the strategies that parents encouraged kids to use in terms of managing their anger. So some of the things that were not different, that were the same for boys and girls, were encouraging them to use like a cool-off strategy, like count to 10 or take a deep breath and blow it out hard, or talking about the cause of their anger, or even trying to give a little time out of like being away from other people. But something that parents did more with boys was having them do something physical, have them rip a piece of paper or punch a pillow or do 10 jumping jacks to kind of get that physical outlet going. And I think that's parents recognizing that sometimes our boys need that physical component. Some girls do too, though. I don't want to take it too far. But I think parents can recognize when their kid will benefit from letting off steam in a physical way.
Does an angry child turn into an angry teen, turn into an angry adult?
If we don't help kids learn strategies to manage their anger, and also learn a few strategies to prevent themselves from getting angry in the first place, then yes, what happens is we have not set that child up to become a teen, to become a young adult, to become an older adult, and learn how to, in a healthy way, handle the things that life throws at them. We have to do a better job when kids are young.
You mentioned schools a moment ago, getting in trouble in school and so forth. Should schools have a role in regards to anger management in children?
Oh, for elementary and middle school kids, schools play a key role. And one of the tough things about being at school is kids don't have a lot of control, right? It's somebody else's schedule. You might be forced to sit next to somebody that really bugs you. Some of the strategies that work well at home, like going off by yourself, well, it's not really feasible at school. So for a lot of kids, schools can be an especially challenging place to keep it together. And what we heard from parents is that almost two-thirds of them said that the schools have teachers or counselors or people who are there to help kids learn how to do a better job managing their anger. However, less than half of the parents said that the child's school was providing information for parents on this topic. And I think that might be a place where schools can do a little bit more so that parents and schools are working together to help kids learn some strategies, and in particular, figuring out what works best for a particular kid.
Aside from schools, are there other types of professional support available for families whose children struggle significantly with anger? And how do parents know it's time to seek that professional help?
About 1 in 7 parents in this national poll said that they think their child gets angry more often than other kids the same age. And I think that is actually a good way to think about it. Does your kid seem to have a quicker trigger or maybe have a harder time calming back down when they do get angry? If that happens, parents will want to talk with their child's primary care provider and see if they can recommend some counselors or child behavioral health specialists in the area that work well with that child's age group, and really have a few sessions. Sometimes it's with the child only, but a lot of times it's with the whole family, so that the child and the family learn about different strategies to try and how to recognize what will help.
Sarah Clark from the University of Michigan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting and rules for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stopped, opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SKINNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SKINNY to 200-300. That's SKINNY to 200-300. SKINNY to 200-300.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Mental health in rural America is at a crisis stage, but an innovative project offers a possible solution. And joining us to talk about this is Andrew Alkiss, who is a physician, a psychiatrist, and clinical assistant professor with the Medical University of South Carolina. Before we get into the project that you worked on, what makes rural communities especially vulnerable to gaps in mental health care?
Sure, it's a great question. I think we have a mental health shortage, unfortunately, in most parts of the country, but especially rural parts of the country are obviously hit a little bit harder, maybe in comparison to more urban areas where our medical centers and academic institutions tend to congregate. It's harder to come across folks practicing mental health in rural communities.
What kinds of mental health issues are most common that would be affected by this program?
Anxiety disorders are one of the most common types of mental health condition out there, and certainly that's a big part of what we hope to help people with. That, I would say, depression, other mood disorders such as bipolar disorder. Some can be a little bit more challenging to treat. More chronic mental health conditions such as schizophrenia, that can be traditionally a bit more challenging if needed.
So does this program combine virtual visits with in-person visits?
It does. It started out grant-funded, working with 4 different rural primary care centers, clinics in parts of the state where, you're kind of looking at one traffic light kinds of locations. The primary care provider and our behavioral health care managers are kind of the front line, if you will. A primary care provider is going to be seeing a patient, and if they have concerns about things like anxiety or depression, we'll then put in an order that then gets them a telephone conversation with one of our behavioral health care managers through our Center for Telehealth. And after a screening process, if they seem like a really good candidate, and most individuals are, they're enrolled. And it's interesting, a big component of the interaction between our care manager and the patient is by telephone. We do offer virtual means with video as well, but most individuals are good just doing it by telephone. And then I come into the fold a little bit later to go over all of the individual patients who have been enrolled and try to provide some guidance for evaluation, if it's treatment recommendations for medicines, types of therapy, additional referrals, labs, workup, whatever we can try to do to really help this individual patient, getting the expertise from a psychiatric provider that otherwise might be really hard to find in their part of the state.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if you can share some statistics that highlight the mental health challenges faced by these rural residents.
Sure. A pretty significant portion of our state, about 34%, would be defined as a rural area. And so many parts of the state didn't have a psychiatric provider at all. 17 of our 46 counties have no practicing psychiatrist. Some of the counties that do have at most one. But again, one of the aims of this project was to try to help provide some additional resources to improve upon that.
Do you feel this program can be replicated in other rural areas across the country?
Absolutely. Whether it be utilizing telehealth or not, collaborative care in particular is something that is being adopted across the country at a lot of different hospitals, academic institutions, and telehealth has been a really exciting way to try to extend those mental health services to those locations.
With certain mental health issues such as depression, can these pretty much be helped with medication, or do they need counseling, or what's the usual formula that could be applied?
The majority of mental health conditions that we're seeing in this type of a program, anxiety, depression, therapy is going to be the bedrock. And really looking at whatever thought patterns are at play and how we're processing emotions, how we're handling stress, I think so much can come from that. If we're looking at more severe depression, medication absolutely can have its place, but usually it's going to be a conjunction sort of a thing. If, you know, we're utilizing medications, we want that to be in conjunction with or at the same time as therapy, because I think that's where a lot of the healing and lasting change can really come from.
We've been talking with Andrew Alkiss, who is a medical doctor, clinical assistant professor, and a psychiatrist affiliated with the Medical University of South Carolina. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for this week's show. Special thanks to this week's InfoTrack contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our internet services are provided by Pear Networks. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Want to protect yourself in this new age of AI-powered cybercrime? We've got an essential interview on how to safeguard your digital life against increasingly sophisticated threats.
AI effectively automates what criminals are able to do by scraping up all the information that it can find out on the internet, and then it can use it against us.
Then, is it time to transform your family's approach to anger management? We have practical strategies to help your kids develop emotional resilience.
It's really helpful if you can turn that into a teachable moment and let your kid see that you're kind of working on the same anger management things that they are.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. InfoTrack begins right after this.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you get coverage options based on how much you want to pay for car insurance. And then you decide how to spend the rest of your money, because you're in charge. Today, you're going to pay down your credit card bill. But you decide when you'll pay it.
Before the due date, so those interest charges don't get you.
But you decide if you pay it in full.
But you definitely should, because again, interest charges.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, we'll help you find coverage at a fair price. And then, you're in charge.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 17th through the 27th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SKINNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SKINNY to 200-300. That's SKINNY to 200-300. SKINNY to 200-300.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Criminals are leveraging artificial intelligence in ways that can trick even the most cautious internet users. InfoTrack reporter Gina Tedesco spoke with an expert to help you avoid sophisticated online scams. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Jake Moore, a global cybersecurity advisor with ESET, a digital security company. Jake, how would you characterize the seriousness of this?
Well, I think it's a huge problem. We've seen AI grow so much over the last, say, few years, but I don't think people really understand how much it's really going to affect us in terms of cybercrime. AI effectively automates what criminals are able to do. And so when it comes to things like social engineering, it can just hold so much information by scraping up all the information that it can find out on the internet, and then it can use it against us. And so few people realize that that's what's happening, that when they see emails and text messages that have so much information on them in those messages, they just get sucked up right into it and believe anything that they're reading.
Now, whether you're using Gmail, Outlook, or Apple products, you're not immune to the new threat. Now, can't these services provide any protection?
Well, this is where we're trying to see AI fight AI, because AI effectively looks and feels very real. I mean, if you've read some good quality AI-created content, you may not spot it straight away. We are working against that all the time. And this is where we see AI fighting that AI. But as it improves, well, it's just getting through all those barriers. And therefore, all the big tech companies, Gmail, Microsoft, all of them, they're trying to improve their systems. But of course, criminals, we all know they're usually one or even two steps ahead. And therefore, that's how they're getting through those barriers.
So let's drill down a little bit with AI. AI scoops up personal information, as you mentioned. And then what happens? How does this get converted into an email that is harmful to us?
Okay, so there's so much information out there on us. And if I were to do that on my own, look up information, say, on you, I'd have to go and look up your social media, do some Google searches, and put it into, say, a document. Let's say a spreadsheet, for example. And that might take me some time to get that all together, package it into an email, and then send it to you. Maybe including something that I imagine you might click on. Say, I know which gym you go to. I could then pretend to be from that gym and say that there's something that you need to download to fill in some information just to carry on with your membership. That would take me some time. But if I could automate that, I could do that at speed, and I could do that very cleverly with some software. But if I then amplify that even more to do lots of people at the same time, in that same time, so the speed is still there, then I've got myself a criminal business. And that's what AI automation software can do right now, and it's getting even better. And if they can then put those manipulation tactics into those personal emails with the links in there that are going to be malicious to capture even more data, or for example, placing malicious software on those devices they're intended to, then we've got a big problem.
And these links, they are the key problem, right? That's the main problem with these emails is not just the email, but the link, correct?
Yeah, so usually what we see with emails, they'll have a link that is targeting those machines, let's say Windows machines, for example. And within those links, they may take them to websites where you may find malware being downloaded to those machines. You've also got documents that are going to be attached to them, and that's where the malware will reside. And if they double-click on those attachments, again, it'll stick to the machine and do a whole variety of things, depending on what the criminal has designed within that. But we're also seeing the same things done with text messages. They'll usually only have a link, and those links will take them to websites. Again, usually this is for when they're trying to collect more information. Such information could be bank details, for example. But what we're seeing one step further than that is they're getting people to click on those links and fill out information. And then a week later, they're called up. And these criminals are purporting to be from their bank's fraud department. And by doing so, they're very cleverly saying, oh, did you by any chance click on a link and give some information away? And immediately they think, yes, that was me about a week ago. Ah, right. It must be because of that. Don't worry. We're here to save the day. Why don't we start moving your money around? And of course, that's when the scam actually starts.
Oh, my goodness. We're visiting with Jake Moore, a global cybersecurity advisor with the digital security company ESET. This concerns what we might call the next generation of email scams that are so personalized, it's harder to tell that they're fake. So, Jake, what are some things people can look for to detect that these emails are not really from who they say they are from?
Well, I would always say start with the research. It doesn't take too long to have a quick look at the email address and get a feel for that email. And if you can go and check it, don't click on those links. Why not go to the actual website? Maybe they're pretending to be from your gym or your bank. Go to that website that you are aware of and have a look through there. And if there's anything that correlates with it, then it might be true, but at least you're then on the actual website that you know and you trust. Because these links, they may look genuine. They may look like they are the same URL, so the same website address as the one you're used to. But these criminals are very clever with just changing one character or maybe making an I look like an L or a 1. And therefore, you may not notice it by just quickly looking at it. So it's always worth doing that research. But it's always a good idea to also show someone else. This might take a bit longer, but if you've got, say, a colleague next to you, get them to spot something. They might see things differently to how you are, especially if you're emotionally or financially invested in that message. And that's what we find with a lot of scams that are connected with our emotions. Say, for example, romance scams. That's one that we may not always see what's truly happening. But if we've also sent some money already, and we may not want to disbelieve it, it's always good to get that second opinion.
And I imagine it's good to actually call the facility if it's a company like the gym and say, hey, did you guys send out this blast email for thus and such? Because then you're also alerting them that they are a little bit of a victim, are they not?
Well, yeah, it's great to give them a call. Again, not on any phone number that's within that email. That should be the number that you can find on the website again. But no, those gyms or whoever these criminals are purporting to be, they might not be aware of this. And they might only, in fact, be the assumed recipient in this whole scam for that one time only. Because, of course, all of these scams are so bespoke that a whole variety of businesses might be looking like they are the ones sending out these messages. So they might be just a piece of that pie just in that one time, but they might never be again.
Now, we know, and you've mentioned it greatly over and over, that we're not to click any link in an email or text because it could be an attempt to trick us and get our personal information. But is it dangerous, Jake, even to reply to a phishing email without clicking a link?
I always advise not to interact with potential scamming emails. I know a lot of people that do. I've seen a lot of social posts where people have had what they would call fun in trying to waste the time of a criminal. But I always advise against it because you don't know how much they know about you. And I have heard the odd horror story here and there where they've become more targeted because they've wasted those criminals' time. And you don't really want to be upsetting them. You just want to ignore it or at least report it to Gmail or Apple or whoever you are with. And the more you report it and put it into the junk folder, you are actually telling, say, Microsoft or Gmail systems what a phishing email looks like. especially when it comes to the campaigns that I use. So the generic or more generic emails, and then the algorithms that are looking into these can then research even more. So it's always good to junk it. But no, I would never go and reply to them because you don't really know who you're talking to.
Jake Moore of ESET Digital Security, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, helping kids deal with anger issues. That story as InfoTrack continues.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting and rules for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SKINNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SKINNY to 200-300. That's SKINNY to 200-300. SKINNY to 200-300.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code QUICK to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code QUICK for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code QUICK for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
40% of school-age American children face negative consequences due to anger issues. But there are practical ways to develop emotional resilience in your family. With the details, here's InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. We're talking with Sarah Clark, co-director of the University of Michigan Health C.S. Mott Children's Hospital National Poll on Children's Health, and this particular poll focused on children's anger and how parents manage it. Sarah, perhaps we can start with what you view as the biggest and maybe the most surprising headlines from this poll.
I think surprising is that among over 1,000 parents of kids between the ages of 6 and 12, nearly 40% of those parents said that in the past year, their kid has experienced negative consequences because of their anger. So it's an issue that a lot of families and a lot of kids are dealing with, and we need to do a better job helping them.
Can you maybe give some examples of what those negative consequences may be?
Sure. It might be getting in trouble at school or getting into a fight with a friend and having that friendship be harmed, or sometimes hurting themselves or other people.
You found in the poll that 7 in 10 parents say they sometimes set a bad example for managing anger. What advice would you give to parents who feel they're modeling poor anger management themselves?
As much as it's embarrassing, and you know what, a lot of us have lost our cool in front of our kids. But it's really helpful if you can turn that into a teachable moment and let your kid see that you're kind of working on the same anger management things that they are. And you can even talk about what strategies you're trying, what seems to work well for you, and even acknowledge that sometimes it's hard to remember to use those strategies, or sometimes it doesn't work and you still get angry. Show your kid that you're human.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Sarah Clark, co-director of the University of Michigan Health C.S. Mott Children's Hospital National Poll on Children's Health. And we're talking about their recent poll that focused on children's anger and how parents manage it. Sarah, did your survey identify the most common triggers for children's anger?
A lot of things will cause kids to get angry, both at home or at school. So we didn't do too much exploring that, but I do want to point out that it can be either an external force, or sometimes it's just the child isn't feeling well, didn't sleep well, is just kind of in a mood. And as a lot of parents know, on some days, anything can set your kid off.
How do parents typically recognize that their child might be struggling with anger more than other kids their age?
I think a clue in that is parents' answers to our question about how they avoid their kid getting angry or frustrated. What are they doing to prevent it? So the biggest one was making sure the kid gets enough sleep. We all know when kids get overtired, they tend to get cranky. Helping to identify what those triggers are and then avoid them. So parents recognize that that is a big problem. Other things are, maybe some parents aren't thinking about this, helping avoid overscheduling. Sometimes as parents, we want to allow our kids to be involved in lots of different things and having them have a lot of opportunities, but too much isn't good for kids. And those are the types of things that parents are recognizing can cause their kids to have an even quicker trigger where they might get angry.
Did your poll find any differences between boys and girls?
In a couple of ways. Parents of boys were more likely to say that their child had had negative consequences from their anger. And we also found a little bit of difference in the strategies that parents encouraged kids to use in terms of managing their anger. So some of the things that were not different, that were the same for boys and girls, were encouraging them to use like a cool-off strategy, like count to 10 or take a deep breath and blow it out hard, or talking about the cause of their anger, or even trying to give a little time out of like being away from other people. But something that parents did more with boys was having them do something physical, have them rip a piece of paper or punch a pillow or do 10 jumping jacks to kind of get that physical outlet going. And I think that's parents recognizing that sometimes our boys need that physical component. Some girls do too, though. I don't want to take it too far. But I think parents can recognize when their kid will benefit from letting off steam in a physical way.
Does an angry child turn into an angry teen, turn into an angry adult?
If we don't help kids learn strategies to manage their anger, and also learn a few strategies to prevent themselves from getting angry in the first place, then yes, what happens is we have not set that child up to become a teen, to become a young adult, to become an older adult, and learn how to, in a healthy way, handle the things that life throws at them. We have to do a better job when kids are young.
You mentioned schools a moment ago, getting in trouble in school and so forth. Should schools have a role in regards to anger management in children?
Oh, for elementary and middle school kids, schools play a key role. And one of the tough things about being at school is kids don't have a lot of control, right? It's somebody else's schedule. You might be forced to sit next to somebody that really bugs you. Some of the strategies that work well at home, like going off by yourself, well, it's not really feasible at school. So for a lot of kids, schools can be an especially challenging place to keep it together. And what we heard from parents is that almost two-thirds of them said that the schools have teachers or counselors or people who are there to help kids learn how to do a better job managing their anger. However, less than half of the parents said that the child's school was providing information for parents on this topic. And I think that might be a place where schools can do a little bit more so that parents and schools are working together to help kids learn some strategies, and in particular, figuring out what works best for a particular kid.
Aside from schools, are there other types of professional support available for families whose children struggle significantly with anger? And how do parents know it's time to seek that professional help?
About 1 in 7 parents in this national poll said that they think their child gets angry more often than other kids the same age. And I think that is actually a good way to think about it. Does your kid seem to have a quicker trigger or maybe have a harder time calming back down when they do get angry? If that happens, parents will want to talk with their child's primary care provider and see if they can recommend some counselors or child behavioral health specialists in the area that work well with that child's age group, and really have a few sessions. Sometimes it's with the child only, but a lot of times it's with the whole family so that the child and the family learn about different strategies to try and how to recognize what will help.
Sarah Clark from the University of Michigan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SKINNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SKINNY to 200-300. That's SKINNY to 200-300. SKINNY to 200-300.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Mental health in rural America is at a crisis stage, but an innovative project offers a possible solution. And joining us to talk about this is Andrew Alkiss, who is a physician, a psychiatrist, and clinical assistant professor with the Medical University of South Carolina. Before we get into the project that you worked on, what makes rural communities especially vulnerable to gaps in mental health care?
Sure, it's a great question. I think we have a mental health shortage, unfortunately, in most parts of the country, but especially rural parts of the country are obviously hit a little bit harder, maybe in comparison to more urban areas where our medical centers and academic institutions tend to congregate. It's harder to come across folks practicing mental health in rural communities.
What kinds of mental health issues are most common that would be affected by this program?
Anxiety disorders are one of the most common types of mental health condition out there, and certainly that's a big part of what we hope to help people with. That, I would say, depression, other mood disorders such as bipolar disorder. Some can be a little bit more challenging to treat, more chronic mental health conditions such as schizophrenia that can be traditionally a bit more challenging if needed.
So does this program combine virtual visits with in-person visits?
It does. It started out grant-funded, working with 4 different rural primary care centers, clinics in parts of the state where, you're kind of looking at one traffic light kinds of locations. The primary care provider and our behavioral health care managers are kind of the front line, if you will. A primary care provider is going to be seeing a patient, and if they have concerns about things like anxiety or depression, we'll then put in an order that then gets them a telephone conversation with one of our behavioral health care managers through our Center for Telehealth. And after a screening process, if they seem like a really good candidate, and most individuals are, they're enrolled. And it's interesting, a big component of the interaction between our care manager and the patient is by telephone. We do offer virtual means with video as well, but most individuals are good just doing it by telephone. And then I come into the fold a little bit later to go over all of the individual patients who have been enrolled and try to provide some guidance for evaluation, if it's treatment recommendations for medicines, types of therapy, additional referrals, labs, workup, whatever we can try to do to really help this individual patient getting the expertise from a psychiatric provider that otherwise might be really hard to find in their part of the state.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if you can share some statistics that highlight the mental health challenges faced by these rural residents.
Sure. A pretty significant portion of our state, about 34%, would be defined as a rural area. And so many parts of the state didn't have a psychiatric provider at all. 17 of our 46 counties have no practicing psychiatrist. Some of the counties that do have at most one. But again, one of the aims of this project was to try to help provide some additional resources to improve upon that.
Do you feel this program can be replicated in other rural areas across the country?
Absolutely. Whether it be utilizing telehealth or not, collaborative care in particular is something that is being adopted across the country at a lot of different hospitals, academic institutions, and telehealth has been a really exciting way to try to extend those mental health services to those locations.
With certain mental health issues such as depression, can these pretty much be helped with medication, or do they need counseling, or what's the usual formula that could be applied?
The majority of mental health conditions that we're seeing in this type of a program, anxiety, depression, therapy is going to be the bedrock. And really looking at whatever thought patterns are at play and how we're processing emotions, how we're handling stress, I think so much can come from that. If we're looking at more severe depression, medication absolutely can have its place, but usually it's going to be a conjunction sort of a thing. If, you know, we're utilizing medications, we want that to be in conjunction with or at the same time as therapy, because I think that's where a lot of the healing and lasting change can really come from.
We've been talking with Andrew Alkiss, who is a medical doctor, clinical assistant professor, and a psychiatrist affiliated with the Medical University of South Carolina. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for this week's show. Special thanks to this week's InfoTrack contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our internet services are provided by Pear Networks. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Mike McKay is back. Wake up with Mike McKay in the morning every weekday morning from 6 till 10 on CFW. Mike has your news and weather every hour and everything you need to know about the fun things happening throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley. Plus, Mike announces your birthday and anniversary shout-outs every morning at 8:15. Send them in through our Facebook or text us. It's easy to do with our free Civic Media app.
Listen in the morning and it'll keep you smiling all day.
Mike McKay in the morning on 105.7 CFW. CFW.
Again.
Stay informed with the latest news throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley on our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. James Kelly and the WCFW News team has what you need to know every hour, 24 hours a day. For the latest news, talk, and discussion on what's important to you, count on 93.5 The Tap and WCFW.FM. Chippewa Valley
weather. I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Sunny skies on tap for today. Southwest winds 5 to 15 and highs in the upper 20s. In the overnight, mostly clear, lower 20s. West to southwest winds, quite breezy. A mix of clouds and sunshine Monday, highs in the middle 30s. It's 3 at our studios. CFW.
Seven CFW, 80s, 90s, and more. Turn this one up for the weekend.
listen. Red light, yellow light, green light, go. Crazy little woman in a one-man show. Mirror queen, mannequin, rhythm of blow. Sweet dreams and green lucero. Lucero. You gotta squeeze a little, tease a little more. Easy operator, come a knocking on my door. Sit him down anytime, sugar me sweet. Little miss her innocent, sugar.
Identify yourself.
WCFW-FM and WCFW-HD1, Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the entire Chippewa Valley.
Pacific Media Radio Station.
80s, 90s, and more. 105.7 CFW.
CFW.
Chippewa Valley.
Some child.